We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
At 6:30 tonight, in about a half hour, a special Nats season preview show with Toby and Savannah right here on The Fan. Make sure you are listening. They got a great program plan. They've got a detailed Nats breakdown. I know baseball fans will be fired up to hear from them in 30 minutes. Kick off your future with the law firm of Kondorian Murad. They're the official Grant and Danny show sponsor. They'll help protect your assets, update your will and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com and mention us, G&D, to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. If you missed Cheeseburger Lovin' Jeremy Chin on Grant and Danny, we got that in common, me and the new safety for Washington. Grab the podcast when we're done, thefandc.com. Let's go to the BetQL guest hotline. Welcome onto the show. A man who, for my money, is the most knowledgeable college basketball expert in the country. It's funny, he probably is like, oh, it must be that time again. This guy's bugging me. Every year around right now, I just start hitting up Patrick Stevens because he's so knowledgeable. He's so good on air. Love Patrick. You can follow him on social at Discourse, but with a one for an I. D1SCOURSE. Patrick, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you?
I am well. How are you doing today?
I am well. Just put together all of his work the last few weeks, getting ready for the tournament. Where he was predicting the bracket for the Washington Post. He's got a great story available for you online now with some of his takeaways. So why don't we begin right there? As far as the bracket that we got, what surprised you most about who got in?
Well, nothing really surprised me about who got in. I was a little surprised, for the better, actually. I did not think the committee was going to treat Texas A&M as well as it did. It was a team that had seven quadrant one victories, the highest tier of victories on the team sheets that the committee looks at. But they also had four quad three losses, which is a lot. So I thought that was a borderline team, and they ended up safely in the field as a nine seed. So that was a good surprise in a way, because I think teams like that should be rewarded, that the good there, a lot of good outweighed the bad. I think a lot of people are surprised to see a three-team Big East contingent that does not include an additional team or two out of that Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's pot, if you will. Was not surprised by that for a variety of reasons, and I'm sure that's one of the situations you probably want to dive into a little bit, but was not surprised at all by that, given the respective profiles of those teams, although I did think Providence rather than Seton Hall actually had the best profile of the three. So who got in wasn't surprising. There were some seeding surprises to me. Basically, it looked like the entire Mountain West outside of San Diego State was devalued. And if San Diego State had been as well, then it might have made a little more sense. But you know, to see Boise State with the resume that it had being stuck in a play-in game was really, really surprising to me. I thought out of all the things, even some of the overseeds like Gonzaga by a couple lines and Florida Atlantic probably by a line or two, Boise State being in a play-in game was really the most startling thing that I saw on that bracket.
If I could pump your tires for a second, maybe surprise wasn't the right word. Didn't you pick every team correctly that got in?
Correct, yes.
I mean, Joe Lunardi doesn't have anything on my guy, Patrick Stevens. People sleep, I'm telling you. You do that like every single year, basically.
Well, you'd probably have to go back and double-check some of the data on that. But I would say it's a decent track record.
It's better than decent. All right, how about Virginia? I wanted them to get in. I'm glad they got in. I'm a bit of a homer in that way. But I was not convinced that they would. Sounds like you agree with them being in. Now, their first four, they're playing in Dayton tomorrow night. Why should they have gotten in? Why did they do the right thing?
Well, first off, let's point out that this was kind of a weird year where you had NC State snatch a bid. And by the way, Virginia could have prevented that on Friday night. But NC State snatches a bid out of the ACC. Oregon makes a Pac-12 title run that you didn't expect. Dayton and Florida Atlantic could have turned their leagues into one-bid leagues, and they didn't. And then you can even look at New Mexico based on the committee's rationale being a team that seized a bid in the last week. And so in a normal year, that Virginia team with that profile, where they didn't really do anything wrong, you know, there's nothing on their sheet that says this is a team that doesn't belong in the tournament. They're not great. They obviously have been blown out by a lot of good teams over the course of the season, but they have no bad losses. Their strength of schedule doesn't cause any alarms. Their two best victories came away from Charlottesville at Clemson and against Florida on a neutral court. And this is the sort of team that usually skates into the field as a 10 seed, and you really don't think anything of them because they're gone by the end of the first weekend. And this year, the field just got tighter and tighter, and that was, I think, suddenly a scenario that they had to sweat a little bit. And you look at the team that just missed the field in Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma had four quad one wins, but they only had two wins against the entire tournament field, and both of those came at home. And so I felt like when you're comparison, I was comparing those two at the end. The committee actually had one team between the two of them, Colorado State. But when I was looking at Virginia versus Oklahoma, I thought the big difference there, even though both of them had largely done nothing wrong, and had piled up a number of losses against really good teams, was that Virginia had done good work away from home and Oklahoma hadn't.
If Virginia gets in, and that would mean that they handle Colorado State in the first four game tomorrow, and then they're playing in a 7-10 game against Texas in the Midwest region, are they live to win a game or two? I know they've been such a disappointment a lot of the years where they didn't win the national title, but it's a different thing now, right? They're more the David than the Goliath.
The thing with Virginia, and I say this about a lot of teams, like everybody loves the cliche that defense wins championships, and you can argue that maybe 2019 proves that, but I actually think 2019 proves my own belief, which is that you have to score to win. And that Virginia team in 2019 wasn't just a good offensive team, it was an elite offensive team. You know, it finished second in the final KenPom rankings that year in adjusted offense. And so when I think about when you get into tournament play, especially once you get beyond the first round or so, like you have to figure out a way to score. That doesn't mean there aren't games that finish 55-53, but usually you're facing pretty good offenses. And the issue with Virginia is kind of twofold. One, they have struggled to shoot from the floor, and they have struggled to shoot free throws all season. And so my big concern with the Cavaliers is, can they simply score enough points to get the job done against really good teams? I mean, I would tell you right now that Colorado State is a good all-around team. Doesn't mean they're unstoppable. Texas is a really good offensive team. Virginia is going to have to play really well to win a game like that. And then, you got Tennessee waiting potentially, you know, you don't know with Tennessee, but potentially, you know, that's maybe a team that Virginia might have a better shot at because they're stronger at the defensive end than the offensive end. It's not hard to imagine Tennessee, Virginia in a struggle to get to 50 points on both ends. But I do think Virginia has it in them to win a game or two. But at the same time, like, there has to be some sort of offensive consistency. And we frankly have not seen that from the Cavaliers here over the last month or so.
Patrick Stevens of the Post. I'm using air quotes when I say local, but I'll stick with the locals for a moment here. Wisconsin and James Madison University. The Dukes are 31-3. Pretty incredible season they just had. And now they're in one of these sexy matchups where everyone's always hunting an upset anyway as a 12 against a 5. How do you like their draw with the Badgers?
Yeah, you know, like, I am deeply skeptical of most Big Ten teams. Even though Wisconsin has been playing better, even though they got a little bit older with guys like Crowell and Wall, and A.J. Storrs had a fabulous year, and John Blackwell has played really well as a freshman. That was a team that had not been playing well prior to the Big Ten tournament at all. They had lost 8 of their previous 11 games, with the wins coming over Ohio State, Maryland, and Rutgers at home. So for them to go on that run was kind of out of line with what they had been over the last month and a half. And meanwhile, you know, James Madison already knows that it can be a slightly above average Big Ten team because it did it to Michigan State when everybody thought the Spartans were going to be in for a special season, and it turned out they were just a 9 seed. Did that on the first day of the season. And Madison, I think the Dukes deserve a lot of credit in that league, playing a number of those Thursday, Saturday, and Wednesday, Fridays on the road where you go play 2 and 3 days. For them to have only tripped up 3 times in that league, which has some decent programs in it, is pretty impressive. And 2 of them were against a really good App State team. So I think that is an older group. You know, you look at the KenPom rankings for them, they rank 12th in experience. They're deep. They're 124th in bench minutes. They defend the 3 really well. I like James Madison a lot to win at least one game in Brooklyn. Would be kind of fun to see them go up against Duke in a second-round game.
You referenced the Big East only getting 3 teams. Let's circle back to that combo. St. John's 20-13, 11-9 in conference, won 6 in a row before getting upended in the Big East semifinal, scored 90 points and pushed the defending champs to the limit in that game. I don't know if net ranking matters or it doesn't. I thought it did. There were 32 there, which Rick Pitino's talked about a lot. I don't even know if they would be the first team in from the Big East. They're the team everyone seems to be talking about. I'm pretty sure it was Providence, though, that became the first team that finished where it did in the conference with multiple wins, you know, going into the tournament, and then didn't get in with 5 games over 500 or something like that, a stat that I saw.
It was Seton Hall that did
Seton
that.
Seton Hall, rather. There it is.
I felt like Providence, when you actually looked at the profile, actually had a better profile overall than Seton Hall did. But I felt like both of those teams had a better case than Georgetown than St. John's.
Well, they had a hell of a better case than Georgetown.
Yeah, that was a slip there. They definitely did. but that actually gets into my next point. You're talking about, well, they won 6 of their last 7. Well, you know, they played 3 of those games against DePaul and Georgetown, which
True.
Means that they just had 3 of their wins scheduled later than other teams in the Big East did. I mean, scheduling serendipity does not equal a hot streak. Let me ask you something else here, all right? How many wins over the tournament field did St. John's have? 1.
I was going to say 2.
They had 1. They had 1 against Creighton.
I mean, yeah, so, it's hard to argue when you start picking apart, I think, the resume. For me, it just – I fall back on, man, if it doesn't feel weird that 3 teams out of the Big East in a year where – I'm not saying the conference was great, but you got teams with bubble resumes. I just would have defaulted to more of those clubs.
Here's part of the problem this year in the Big East. You know, one of the Big East's greatest advantages is that double round robin, right, where you get two bites of the apple against Marquette, 2 against Connecticut, 2 against Creighton, 2 against Nova, because in most years Nova's pretty good. But you also had 2 of the 3 or 4 worst power conference teams in the country in Georgetown and DePaul. And so having a home and home against them, I looked it up yesterday, sort of the equivalent was like having home and homes against Tennessee Martin and Robert Morris. Like if you looked at the rankings, it was like each of those was like within a spot or two of Georgetown and DePaul respectively. And so those were 4 games of empty calories that, yes, you won those games and it puffed up your win-loss record, but it really didn't do any good for you. It dragged down your strength of schedule. I think the league needs both of those teams to get better more than anything else. Like, you could afford to have one of those teams be awful, but to have both of them combined to go 0-36 against the rest of the conference, not good.
Patrick Stevens of the Post, watching the Big 12 title, well, throughout really the entire weekend was incredible. I guess let's pivot then to Houston, Iowa State, for that matter. Iowa State is a 2 seed, getting in out of the East, and Houston the 1 seed in the South. Should I care that Iowa State dismantled them the way that they did? You mentioned scoring, and you made a great point on Virginia the year that they won it. Iowa State in KenPom's like 55, I think. And that's kind of been my concern all along, was maybe there's not enough offense. But I always seem to over-consider like these tournament games. How should I be feeling about those two teams respectively?
Yeah, I think both of them, you know, you're going to be able to count on them to be in games. Like, I think in both of those cases, they're teams that you should expect to see make it through the first weekend of the tournament. Although I do think Washington State or Drake against Iowa State could be a fun matchup. One of the things to remember about the committee is they start the seeding process like on Tuesday or Wednesday. And so they've already like stashed all these teams on these lines already, which is why when the seed list comes out and you see Iowa State at 8, even behind Marquette, it's like, well, some of this was done early. And the results, you know, remember, like a conference tournament isn't even accounting for 10% of the season for these higher seeded teams in power leagues. So not surprised to see Iowa State on the 2 line. Certainly think both of those teams are going to be tough outs. But I would also agree that, you know, when you look at the offense for Iowa State, you know, the funny thing is the offense hasn't necessarily been the problem when they've lost. It was when they lost at Kansas State in their regular season finale. But otherwise, you're looking at games where they were largely in league play right around a point per possession. It's actually other teams were able to do a little more damage against them, like a BYU put up 87 points on them in Provo, like a Houston scored 73 in 66 possessions, like Baylor 70 in 65. So I think Iowa State's good. I certainly think that they have a really good shot at being a second weekend team, and from there it's a matter of, can they get a little bracket luck, and can they find a way to score a few more points than maybe they normally have in those types of games?
Just a couple of moments left with Patrick Stevens here. All right, so you've seen how the bracket came and went, the Selection Sunday announcements. We know what the draws are. What's your Final Four and championship game look like?
Man, I haven't really given it much thought, to be honest. So I think I said to somebody earlier today, I think I was going with like Kentucky – and maybe Marquette. I mean, it was really like, I don't fill out brackets for any sort of pools or anything like that, and I haven't for 20 years. And so this year is one where I was just so tired yesterday that I was
like,
thinking about what was going to happen in the future. I was just worried about crossing the finish line last night. So it's candidly not something that I've spent all that much time thinking about. I will tell you, And I, you know full well, I watch a lot of games in person and some more on TV. The Connecticut's the best team that I've seen this season.
So I have major concerns, though, about picking UConn, which has been my thought, really, circuit to circuit. Everyone's now picking them. There was a TV show I was watching, ESPN last night, had like 8 people all make their predictions. They all picked UConn. That's just not how this tournament goes. That makes me not want to pick UConn.
Well, sometimes it works out that way, but I'll point out this. The committee did UConn no favors. 11 of the 32 conference tournament champions, so 11 of the teams that are presumably playing well heading into the tournament, are in the East bracket. So Connecticut and 10 others with them. So it is possible that they could wind up having to go through 5 of them total to win a national title. They won't have to go through one in the second round because neither Florida Atlantic nor Northwestern did. But I would say this too, that, you know, there's only so many teams that are fully trustworthy to make it through to the second weekend. And I think Connecticut is one of them. From there, it becomes, in a one and done scenario, it's about matchups. It's about what kind of whistle you get. It's about whether you can stay healthy, all these things that are really, really hard to completely figure out a week or 2 weeks in advance.
For what it's worth, UConn number 1 in adjusted O, 11 adjusted DVOA KenPom. I mean, only Arizona has top 12 rankings on both ends of the floor, other than UConn, among the entire bracket. I know the work you put in, and it was well worth it because you crushed it again and got all the teams right. Patrick, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great intel. Patrick Stevens, Washington Post on Grant and Danny. Let's get you a Caps power play. Set it off the top of the show today. This is a massive game for the Capitals. They have won back-to-back on this five-game road trip, got 4 points, huge critical points out west. So they've got a chance with a regulation win tonight, pick up a couple of more, win an overtime. Frankly, a shootout doesn't really matter, I guess, because you're playing a team in the west, so them getting a point can't hurt you. But you're ending this five-game road trip. You'd come back with 6 points after getting blown out in each of the first two games, which would be huge. This is the longest roadie of the season. Final game the Caps will play actually outside of the Eastern time zone this season is tonight in Calgary. Start time, middle of the 8 o'clock hour here in D.C. But you rebound from that 3-0 loss to Winnipeg, 7-2 against Edmonton. You got the huge win against Vancouver last night, 2-1. Back-to-back 2-1 victories going back to Thursday against Seattle. And then Saturday night, against a team in their building where they were 21-6-4 on the season, and they're doing it with a combination of the old guard, Alex Ovechkin scoring the game winner on Saturday night, Tom Wilson scored in the game, TJ Oshie played in his 1,000th game and brought his normal energy, effort, heart, hustle, and then the kids. Huge play by Hendrix LaPierre. Some big moments for Connor McMichael. Amazing assist from Mereshnichenko, who's just 20 and now played in 10 games this season. This is a fun team to watch right now. Charlie Lindgren's been great between the pipes, 21 straight saves after giving up a goal about a minute in against Vancouver. They have been a lot of fun to watch. They're buttoned up on defense, and they're scoring more goals. Fourth in the NHL on the power play, top 10 in goals per game since the All-Star break. But here comes the big stretch now starting tonight. 16 games, final 30 days. Nobody else in the East playoff picture plays that many games, and only 5 of those games against teams outside of playoff consideration right now in the East, the least of anybody. So it's going to be a grind. But a win tonight, 2 points this evening, and the Caps come home to get back to Capital One Arena as a team currently in the playoffs if they can get a win for the first time since January, which would be amazing. That is your Capitals power play. If you missed any part of today's show, including our breakdown of Austin Eckler's suggestion that maybe the Commanders could go worst to first this year, and our conversation with one of the newest members of the Commanders, Jeremy Chin, you can grab the podcast at thefandc.com. GrantandDanny.com/audio. Speaking of podcasts, if you're a big Nats baseball and prospects fan, Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 100. We got a ton of interviews with prospects at spring training you should check out in the days ahead. But if you're a Nats fan, keep it right here on The Fan, because next, your season preview show with Toby Altizer, Savannah McCann, live in studio on Half Street here in D.C., getting you ready for opening day.
Thank you for coming.
I'm Toby Altizer with your sports update on The Fan. In the NFL, the Commanders are signing cornerback Michael Davis. He played 7 seasons with the Chargers. Chase Young has found his new location. That's going to be New Orleans. He signed on a 1-year, fully guaranteed $13 million deal with the Saints today. And the 49ers are losing a 2025 fifth-round pick, and their 2024 fourth-round pick is being moved to the end of the fourth round because of payroll accounting errors. In hockey tonight, a huge game for the Capitals as they wrap up their 5 5-game road trip in Calgary tonight against the Flames. It's an 8:30 puck drop right here on the Fan. The Capitals are just 1 point behind the Red Wings for the second wild card spot. With a win tonight, they would move into playoff position. College hoops tomorrow. The first four kicks off the men's tournament. 16 seeds Howard and Wagner will kick everything off at 6:40, and then Colorado State and Virginia will go at it as the 10 seeds. The men's tournament's one seeds are UConn, Purdue, North Carolina, and Houston. And in the women's tournament, Virginia Tech is a 4 seed. They'll take on Marshall on Friday afternoon, and Maryland is a 10 seed. They'll take on Iowa State Friday night. From the Crop Metcalf, 5-star sports desk, I'm Toby Altizer on the Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.